I'm Michael Bossel, and you're listening to The Sound of the Loons.
Morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when this finds you. Welcome to the Sound of the Loons podcast. I'm Steve McPherson, and I'm joined by Robert McCloskey's popular children's book, Blueberries for Cal Williams. On the docket today, we'll talk about some games that weren't within the context. This got a little confusing in my writing. On the docket today, we'll talk about some about the games that weren't, as in the ones that were suspended, within the context of the whole season. We'll jump in the Wayback Machine to talk about the game against Houston, and look ahead to the game against Cincy. But first, we wanted to take a moment and give a shout-out to the presenting partners for our 2020 season. Those partners are Allianz, Allina Health, Bell Bank, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, Federated Insurance, and M Health Fairview. We really want to thank those sponsors for sticking with us throughout this weird and wild season. To learn more about any of our partners, you can visit mnufc.com/club/partners. Cal, how about that snow out there?
It's gnarly. I'm not ready for this at all. I was very much looking forward to what seemed to be a lovely fall ahead of us for at least a couple of weeks. And all of a sudden now we are just decimated in snow. Tried to drive around yesterday, had one or two little things to take care of, and it was just a disaster. It was complete chaos out there. Just not very pleasant, really. But here we are with several regular season games remaining.
Yeah, I believe this is, I have to check in on this. I think that the record before for snowfall was like 3 inches by this date or something. So we definitely blew past that, which I think would make, I think this was going to be the biggest storm earliest ever in Minnesota. Not that it was, you know, as far as disastrous snowstorms, we're not talking about the Halloween blizzard, which everyone talks about all the time, which I was not present for, but I've been around long enough to know that it happened. It obviously gummed up the works a little bit, but hopefully we get a little melt in here. I think it's going to be supposed to get up into the 40 area, top 30s for the next couple days, which is good news for me because my furnace is broken also. So I got a lot of things hitting the fan all at the same time. It's going fantastically well over here. I also know you have a cat, your cat sitting. How do you enjoy cats overall?
Well, I am a cat person. Not that I'm against dogs. I love dogs. I just love animals in general, to be honest, Steve. I am an animal man, and sometimes I bond with them better than human beings, which isn't really that difficult in 2020, is it?
Sure.
But cat's great, just very needy. And I don't mind a little snuggle here and there, a little head boop from time to time, but this cat is particularly needy. I had to shut the door before we started recording this because I know for a fact it would have been all over the place here, and it would have been meowing consistently, so we would have had no chance. So we'll hear it at some stage, though. I bet you it's at the door right now. I bet you it'll start meowing at some stage.
I just imagine it. I'm sure your door does not have windows in it, but we have some doors in our house that have little windows. I just imagine the cat just sitting at the door with its little paw up, just, Cal, why'd you leave me?
Yeah, and that's what gets me. I'm like, oh, okay, come in, you know, and I'm completely ruined.
You can't let them in. As I keep telling my kids, we have a dog, and when the dog is bothering them, they're just like, they're talking to it. They're like, leave me alone. Like the dog is, I was like, just ignore him. Like, just if you ignore him, he will figure it out and he will stop. But as soon as you, and he has unerring sense of attention. If you give him even like the side eye, he knows you're paying attention to him. So you just got to completely shut him out of your mind and then he'll leave you alone. He'll go fall asleep somewhere. So
I'll try giving it a go.
Yeah.
But it's very, very hard with this cat, let me tell you. It's difficult to ignore a cat that's consistently running around. And if they're not running around, they're rubbing against your legs or just plonking themselves on you. I mean, it's very, very difficult. But hey, here we are. There are worse things in the world, aren't there?
Yeah, it's not too bad. All right, let's talk about these postponed games a little bit. You know, within the context of what we can sort of assess. I sort of want to think about them in terms of the whole season and just the way that the texture of the season is so odd. The game against Chicago Fire has been rescheduled for November 4th. No word as yet, I believe, on FC Dallas. FC Dallas is also the last team that Minnesota United plays this season in any case. So, you know, I've heard things about teams possibly making up games in the time between the end of the regular season and the playoffs. But it seems like not every team is going to end up playing the same number of games at this point. Colorado's missed like six. They're like six games behind right now. So, I mean, is that just how it's going to be?
I mean, Cal, I
know you have control over this, so please tell me.
I mean, you know, I know the whole points per game thing has been talked about as well, and a predictor and all this kind of stuff. And it's just so unfortunate because I thought the Rapids were actually looking fairly decent, actually, and then they had the outbreak of the virus. And look, safety has to remain paramount, doesn't it? You know,
that's absolutely
be all and end all. And if it means forfeiting the season from a Colorado perspective, then I mean, so be it. You know, you never want to see that happening. But if it comes down to people's safety and a game of soccer, yeah, you gotta obviously go with the safety. So yeah. I don't know, Steve. I don't know what they're going to do. I wouldn't like to be the person who is making these decisions because there's some really, really difficult ones ahead for them. You know, I don't know, Steve. I don't know how they are going to make the six or seven games that they've missed. I don't know how they're going to make it up unless they do. You know, once it's safe, they do. You know, because you've got to schedule the opponents as well, and it's got to work for them. And you know, unless they, you know, they do games on, okay, let's do a Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, if possible. But if not, then you do, I don't know, Tuesday, Thursday or something. You know, work around the opponent's schedule. I don't know how they're going to do it, Steve, but it's it has caused a problem for Major League Soccer. And I don't think they thought that this would happen. I'm sure there was a plan of some sort in place, but to deal with something and the severity of a situation like this, where there are six or seven games that have been missed, I don't know. I don't know how you plan for it. You know, I'm sure there were some conversations as to what happens if one or two are missed, but six or seven, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, well, you know, and just as even to begin with, you knew that they probably sort of had some sense that you're heading into a season where you're going to have two games a week for most teams most of the time. There's just not going to be a ton of like flexibility as far as, you know, scheduling in extra games that you need to schedule in here or there. And then you've got the weird matchup issues that come with, like, you know, what does strength of schedule even mean anymore? You know, I was looking at an article on themlssoccer.com talking about, you know, who's, you know, who looks good and everything like that. And it's like, you know, Portland and Seattle, like, how do you separate them? And it's like, well, Portland has ended up playing the Galaxy, who have looked terrible like three times. And it's like, I would kill for a game against the Galaxy after having to travel to, you know, Texas, after Minnesota went to Texas like every other day, it felt like, for a month. So, you know, it, like, that's also just weird. So even the points per game thing, again, it's like, it, maybe that's a better way to determine it, but you're still going to be kind of stuck with these records that are very weird records. You know, and I think that also the other thing, as we were just talking about, weather is going to become a factor like real quickly here for some teams. I mean, coming here to play, you know, your last set of home games, I mean, you know, we got a couple of weeks left here. It could get real snowy for some teams who, you know, for when FC Dallas wants to come and play. Or I don't know, I can't remember. That's not away. Actually, is that annoying?
It is away, but Minnesota finished the season at home to FC Dallas.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. Like, man, that's we could have another snow. We had the snow opener. We could have the snow closer now. So.
Yeah. I mean, it is an issue that only a handful of countries around the world really deal with, and this obviously being one of them. And can you imagine MLS Cup final here, Steve? It would be wouldn't it? I remember doing MLS Cup final in 2013 in Kansas City, and it was early December, I think, and it snowed then, and there was frost all over the place, and there was the field. I mean, really,
yeah.
Now that I think about it, the game shouldn't have been played, really. but it was. And I remember my father-in-law telling me he was in the crowd and he went to go and get a can of beer. And they ran out because it was so cold. All the beers had exploded within. So it was just such a bizarre situation. I can't remember exactly what the temperature was that day, but it was cold.
Yeah.
My point here is it'll certainly be colder here. But
yeah.
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine it, Steve. It would just be crazy.
Yeah. Last thing I want to bring up with the schedule overall and sort of the league overall, what's your feeling on the Supporters Shield decision, the decision to not award the Supporters Shield this season? I'll give you my reaction after I get your reaction.
My reaction is I was disappointed because, you know, this season, just simply getting through it, it feels like a reward in itself. But for the team that finishes top of this league, they should get a reward. I'm not suggesting they should get the Supporters' Shield, but there should be a reward of some sort. And if the Supporters' Shield has been the consistent reward for that accolade over the last 10 years or so, then just keep it as it is. The other side of it is no supporters, should there be a Supporters' Shield? Because it is a shield that it's not just a piece of silverware and hardware. It does represent the fans. And it was something that was created by the fans, that's continued on by the fans and a small group of people that have put this together. So I can see both sides of it, but I have to feel sorry for Greg Vanney and Toronto FC, who are leading the way at the moment. You know, they've, to my knowledge, they've not won the Supporters Shield before. And it was something that was in their mindset they wanted to do. We know 2020 has been different. And whatever happens this year, there will be an asterisk next to 2020. If you win the league, if you win the Supporters' Shield, what have you. If you're, you know, in Europe and you win the Premier League or whatever, you know, there will always be an asterisk next to this season. But that's okay. It doesn't mean you have to change things. It's just we're always going to remember what it was like. So I can see both sides, Steve, but I know if I was around a team that were realistically involved in the Supporters' Shield chase, I would be very disappointed.
Yeah, I think that I understand that, you know, thinking about it a little more and reading the statement from, you know, the ISC, I believe is the organization, and there's a sense to it for sure. My immediate reaction was like, I mean, we've had so many things taken away from us this year. Like, can we just give, like, I just feel like we're all in need of a reward, you know? And it's not like Minnesota United is in the running for Supporters Shield, but it's just like, do we have to take away one more thing? Like, it's just so many things are being taken away. And it's like, I sort of feel like if there was some kind of situation where, you know, there's been issues before in MLS and certainly in the wider world with supporters and supporter culture and conflicts between teams and supporters. And if there was some situation in which, you know, supporters were banned from stadiums or something and there was this rift between the teams and the supporters, then maybe that's like, okay, well, there's no supporters. But it's like, supporters are still there. Like, just because they can't come to the games, you know, it's like they didn't stop supporting the team, I would hope. And so to a certain extent, I feel like, I don't know, I guess my baseline reaction, you know, I sort of understand it. I'm a little more sympathetic having read more on it, but I'm still sort of like, come on, we don't get anything. Like, give us something. Like, let us have it, you know? So it just feels a little unfair to me.
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a real shame when you talk about it like that. But, you know, the decision, the decision may very well be reversed. I think they're all having discussions, aren't they? I just thought it was a little bit needless to take it away, to be honest, Steve. Just keep it as it is. You know, I that's me talking fairly naively about the situation because I don't know, maybe there's difficulties getting the shield to a certain location or something. You know, I don't know. But we'll wait and see. I don't think I'm alone in saying I'm hopeful that the decision is reversed and the Supporters' Shield is made available, because if you finish top of the standings in 2020, it deserves some sort of recognition.
For real, for real. All right, let's move on and talk about the game against Houston Dynamo that took place at Allianz Field last weekend. It wasn't quite Tottenham West Ham as far as the comebacks go, but it was it was a bit rough. You know, I think that again in a tight competition for points, a point is a point. And I think any team will say, I mean, we've talked before, you want to get 3 points at home, you want to get a point on the road. This was, you got a point on the road against Houston in almost the exact same circumstances earlier with the Dynamo launching a comeback. But a point at home really feels like a loss when it goes that way, quite honestly.
Yeah, at our stadium, it always feels like a loss when you get a tie or, you know, you don't take advantage of the opportunities. Look, I've no problem saying this, Steve, but it's not good enough. It's not good enough for Minnesota United at home to be tying a game and to have the comfort of the lead that they did and to finish the game in the manner which they did, you know. I remember being extremely underwhelmed by a handful of individuals that I was disappointed with. But I think more than anything, Steve, it showed, and I think Adrian Heath might have said this, whether it was to us or to the press afterwards, you know, there is something to be said. The fact that the last time they had a proper training session was the day before the Nashville game, which was, you know, what, 10, 11 days prior to this game, you know? So it can take its toll. It really can. And Houston Dynamo would have had the excuse of the fact, well, they'd played 5 games in 15 days. So, you know, you can go either way with this one in the sense of Houston Dynamo, where they looked exhausted. They've played too much. And obviously things aren't going well. But on the other hand, they continue to be familiar with each other, and there is a fluidity about them because of the consistency that they've played with each other. So I can see both sides, but from a Minnesota point of view, it's not good enough. You have to win your home games. You have to win your home games in this league against a conference opponent like Houston Dynamo, who are decent. They've not had a particularly enthralling campaign, but... they have some good players. They have some individuals that can cause you problems, no doubt. But I just thought it was a disappointing result, especially because Minnesota led by 2. And at one stage, I thought they could have gone on to get 3 or 4. There was the one chance, I think it was right out of the gate in the second half, where Molino struck it from the edge. And it was a relatively routine save for the goalkeeper, from what I can remember from Maric. But I did think to myself, okay, they've started well. There's momentum behind them. If they get a third, the game is completely over. But what happened was, late in the game, they opened up and they presented the opportunity for Houston to get that one back. And it's the old saying, Steve, 2-0 is the most difficult and sometimes scary scoreline in this sport. Because once the opposing team gets one back, everything changes from a psychological point of view. And that's exactly what happened to Minnesota.
Yeah, you would almost, Cal, want to see go into the locker room a goal up and then get that second goal in the second half. You know, like defending 2-0 for the length of a game is very difficult. Going up early like that, it's tough, especially given those circumstances, as you alluded to. Again, this season is just so weird. You'd think that you would have thought sort of maybe with Houston's recent schedule, they would have been gassed. Minnesota United got some rest, although not training, obviously, but they, you know, they sort of had some time to recharge a little bit, you know, that they'd be energized. But over the course of the game, it was just Houston looked aggressive and in rhythm. The Loons just looked gassed by the end. It sort of reminded me of, you know, like when your phone hits that 20% point and it's like you put it on low power and you're just hoping to get all the way to the end without it dying, and then it sort of dies. That was sort of like watching Minnesota United. It was like there was a decent amount of energy. 2 goals from Ethan Finlay, which we'll talk about a little bit more specifically, were fantastic, but also sort of crimes of opportunity, you know, not things that came out of like clear, consistent ball movement, you know, in the final third that result. It was opportunism that was taken and delivered well. From that moment, it just sort of seemed like it was going downhill. I thought one of the things that Adrian touched on in his post-game availability that was interesting was that he kept saying there was poor decisions all night. And I thought that was an interesting thing because, it had me thinking that I think that maybe individual decision-making is at possibly more of a premium in soccer than in a lot of other sports because of 2 things. 1, the freedom that the players have, and 2, the size of the field. Like just the fact that bad decisions change so much of the geography of how the game is being played. Like if you look at the NFL and baseball, there's not a ton of individual agency. A lot of decisions are made by coaches. They're made at a level above players. There's a certain level of improvisation that occasionally happens, but most things are like a pitcher is pitching because it's two guys have decided to do it together. They've taken time. There's been a communication. Coaches will move guys into certain shifts. It's very clearly sort of communicated. In the NBA, there's a lot of agency, but there's a lot of possessions, and the game is played on such a small court, the amplification of any individual problem is less. You know, there's so many possessions going back and forth. You make a bad mistake, you make a bad decision on one possession, you try to get it back on the next possession. But soccer, you know, like the players are given a lot of license out there, you know, as is pointed out, you know, the coach game plans for stuff. But once the game goes, he doesn't have a ton of influence on individual things that are happening out there. But there's so few opportunities to score. You know, there's so few shots compared to a sport like basketball or something like that. You know, I feel like maybe this is one of the greatest effects of not practicing steadily for a couple of weeks there, where it's just that erosion of that, some of that inherent sense of what other players want to do and where they're going to go. And then your decision-making is a step slow. You're thinking the game rather than feeling it. And then those poor decisions just are super amplified in soccer because there's so few opportunities to massively directly affect the game. And then when you make a mistake, you see it in turnovers all the time, right? Like one poor decision at midfield turns into a counter the other way, and then it's a goal. And so that poor decision-making has a huge effect on the game.
It's a complicated game, Steve. That's why it's the best game in the world. And, look, in terms of the Dynamo result, look, let's talk about some negatives and then move on to positives.
Yep.
Negatives, I thought there was some, some poor performances. I've no problem naming the individuals. I thought Clément Metenier was nowhere near the level that we know he can be. I thought Molino was not at the level that we know he can be as well. And myself and Kindred East St. Albans said this in our post-game show, that it felt as though Minnesota really lacked an individual who could grab the game by the scruff of the neck and really take control. And you want that to be someone like a Kevin Molino. And he has done in the past. And the frustration is there because you know he can do it. And when he doesn't do it, it is supremely irritating. So I would expect more to come from Molino. I thought he was fine in the 10 role, but I think, you know, if you are going to play that role, you have to have the ball at feet a lot more. Of course, you need the pieces around you to make the puzzle work, but I just didn't think it was his best outing at all. And let's also take a moment to talk about the red card that never was as well, because Hasani Dotson, to my knowledge, has got some nasty bruising around his ankle after the challenge from Adam Lundqvist. And, our cameras caught it. And we immediately said, perhaps that there should be. We never want to be the commentary team that's screaming and shouting for someone to be sent off. That's not what Kindra and I are about as a commentary team. But when something like that happens, you know, you shouldn't. As a commentator there, you shouldn't feel the need to have to do that because the referee should make the right decision. But that for me was a reckless challenge. No malice behind it. I just think it was mistimed. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it should have been a red card, and that would have given Minnesota United an advantage, obviously, numerically. So that was a shame. In terms of positives, Steve, again, I found myself impressed with Bakary Diabaté. Again, just looks like he's played at the very top level for a long time, which is what he has done for the most part. Thought he's made an almost seamless transition into Major League Soccer and has really added a lot to the back line. And him and Boxall look to be very good together. And as you mentioned, Ethan Finlay, two goals, did very, very well, took his chances extremely well. He was a little sharper in front of goal than what he was against Nashville in the last game several weeks ago. I think he felt bad after missing the chance and perhaps the best chance for Minnesota in Nashville. To my knowledge, he went and apologised to Adrian Heath and the team afterwards because he's that kind of player. He holds himself accountable. And I think rather than taking a touch too many, which he may have done, he may have delayed in Nashville, he didn't make that mistake again. You know, he was clinical with his finishing. The second one as well is a lovely finish. The first one's very good as well. It ends up in the top corner. But the second, when he's approaching from an angle and he has to go back across the goalkeeper, with his weaker foot, I think it was a really good finish. So two superb finishes, wonderful display from Ethan Finlay, who I think once again has put himself back into the starting 11 purely by playing and not by talking. You know, there's a lot of footballers around the world that tend to talk a lot and then they don't walk the walk. Ethan Finlay is the complete opposite. He's such an asset to Minnesota United. And put out the other day, Steve, I don't know anybody who is as persistent in terms of being a complete pest like Ethan Finlay. In terms of, I don't know an American like that.
Right.
So why has he not got more playing time for the national team? Why has he only got 3 caps? And especially now, I would say to Greg Berhalter, you know this player. You had him at Columbus Crew. You know what he can offer. And I understand right now the US are trying to transition and there's a lot of young, exciting, hungry players come through. It's a wonderful time for US soccer because right now, I would argue, there's more potential than ever. But sometimes you do need some of these veterans to get the ball over the line. You need them to get the results away at tricky places, i.e. Trinidad and Tobago. So I would seriously say to Greg Berhalter, just have a look at Ethan Finlay because I think he's so different to anything else you've got on the roster right now. I'm not suggesting he's going to be a star player and start next 30 games for the national team, but at least have him in the roster because I think his experience can offer a lot. Hello. I think he'd be very good for the national team, but that's my opinion. I thought he was excellent against Houston for sure.
Yeah, I think that first of all, on the Hassani Dotson challenge there that didn't get a card or get reviewed, or I guess he got a yellow, right? But didn't get a red. I will say where I sit for home games in the press box, we're all distanced, but we're next to the video booth where they do that stuff, and I saw it happen, and I saw him stay down. And then I heard them like queuing up the replay, you know, as they're sort of setting that up. And I just heard, ooh, like from everybody in there. So like, I knew it was bad. And then when I saw the replay, I was like, yeah, that's pretty rough. So, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about Hassani and his status going forward as we look at Cincy. But
with that, Steve, sorry, with that, if because it was reviewed to my knowledge. And because of your story there, there's proof that it's been reviewed and I've certainly had a look at it. How have they not given a red card in that situation?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I'm sick of the inconsistencies of VAR.
Yeah.
Not only Major League Soccer, across the Premier League, it's been woeful as well. I think what all of us want, whether it's fans or broadcasters or what have you, we just want consistency. And right now, it seems like it's anything but. And I know for the second Houston goal, the ball came across and when Hansen put it in, the referee blew the whistle straight away and he was going to his ear straight away and it's like, there's nothing wrong with this goal. What are we looking at here? You know, yeah. And we need some transparency. We need to be communicated to for sure. And I think the fans need some more information as well because right now, I think VAR is all over the place and it really needs reviewing for sure. It needs reviewing itself. VAR needs reviewing.
We need a VAR for VAR. I'll say Ethan looks great. First of all, I want to say you said, you know, he walks the walk. He doesn't talk the talk. He also talks the talk because, man, that guy can talk. The post-game availability for him, it's always like, you know, I'm going through the transcription. It's a lot. I mean, he's great. He's very thoughtful, and I love talking to him. But he also does walk the walk. You know, he's doing that stuff that is perfect Ethan things, running down the back line sort of diagonally. I mean, I had him on once talking about that. This was 2 years ago, probably a goal against Orlando, I believe, where he sort of gives the ball up and then he's just sort of running vertically along that line. And it's like, maybe you're going to end up offside, but maybe not, but you're right in that spot and you're making yourself a pest, like you said, and dangerous. And that's what that's what he's made his living doing. And those long busting runs, man, when he goes, when he gets the ball and he just goes, it's great. So it got him into the team of the week, for MLS. Also Dane St. Clair was on the bench. We should mention, obviously not the best game after not giving up any goals for a long time, but his run of 349 minutes without allowing a goal was the longest in Minnesota's MLS history by a pretty good bit. I think the last one was something like 270 or something like that. So, so more good stuff for Dane St. Clair. And I was going to talk about Baki Dabasi in the next, as we preview Cincinnati, but we could talk about it here. I wanted to have a brief moment of appreciation for him because I think that people can forget that adjusting to a new league like MLS comes along with a whole lot of ups and downs and bumps and bruises. Sometimes guys just don't transition that well, even if they're very good players. We saw Ramon Metanier last year did a great job just jumping right into his role there. But Tabassi has just slid in seamlessly. He's a big body. He's a great partner with Michael Boxall. Underappreciated, I think, partly because, I mean, Boxy is underappreciated, and then Tabassi's contributions are probably underappreciated. I think at the end of the season, you know, we're going to see that we got quite a good player in Tabassi, and that that center back pairing is going to be fantastic going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. And also, as you mentioned there, perhaps the most underappreciated man on the field at the moment seems to be Michael Boxall. If there is an end of season awards going out internally for Minnesota United, for me, Michael Boxall would be the Minnesota United player of the year right now, because he's been superb. He's hardly put a foot wrong all season. Still is the only player to play every single minute of the regular season as well. And also, this is the thing, I've not mentioned this yet. I don't know if it's known or not. But Michael Boxall actually separated his shoulder in a game against Kansas City. And he's been, I'm not entirely sure what he's been doing, but he's been having treatments on it and playing through the pain throughout the last 5 or 6 weeks. I mean, he's a he is a gargantuan man. He is he's somebody who he's a leader, Steve. He's a leader for sure. There's a reason why he was given the captain's armband in Alonso's absence, you know. And imagine doing that. Imagine separating your shoulder. And then thinking, ah, oh, it's okay, no big deal. I'll take the appropriate league-cleared medication, pain-killing things, and just get on with it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me, you know? So, again, someone who is vastly underappreciated around Major League Soccer, I think. And I think his contributions need to be looked at a lot more across the league.
Sorry, I'm trying to keep the background noise from bleeding into your responses, but they just stopped. That's great. So yes, Michael Boxall, incredible. You know, he also had a second child during this season, which is never easy on anyone. Second child is hopefully a little bit, you know, the terrain a little better than with your first one. But yeah, I don't even want to imagine separating my shoulder regardless of whether I have to go play soccer. So I'll just stay with that. I did want to throw out something that sort of came up on the broadcast that we were, you know, I heard, and I don't want to, I'm trying to accuse Kendra of not of anything without her here to respond, but there was a discussion about possession and how much Minnesota needed a little more of the ball to just sort of stabilize the game. And I think that there's certainly a good point there as far as like trying a team that is up two goals, you know, needs to be able to hold on to that ball and not give it up. But I did a little math right here. In games, this is all over the season, MLS is back included, games where Minnesota United has had more than 50% possession, they are 2-3-2. And in games in which they've had less than 50% possession, they're 6-3-4. So the team has played well without the ball. And it's just one of those interesting things. We've talked about it before as far as the possession. And I think that most coaches want their team to be a possession-based team. It gives the feeling that the players have agency, they're on the ball. It seems like a no-brainer that when you have the ball, you have more control of the game. But I'm just always curious about this thing of like, if you just see a team like, hey, when you have less than 50% possession, you seem to be doing pretty well. Not that you want to give up the ball for that, but like there is some level of understanding to come to like, this team is best on the counterattack right now. They just don't have, you know, the way the season is right now, they don't have the personnel to control the ball consistently in the final third and create scoring chances out of that. Their best work comes in the counterattack. And that's, I think that's okay.
Yeah, well, I don't think you need to really control the ball and have a huge and an abundance of possession in the final third, Steve, because you obviously that's when you're breaking away. I think Kendra's point was probably alluding to the fact that Minnesota didn't have enough possession during that particular spell that she was talking about, which was correct, because Houston Dynamo came into the game and they looked a lot more comfortable on the ball. Whereas if Minnesota would have gotten a hold of it and calmed it down a little bit and executed a couple of passes around and just slowed it down a bit, I think it really would have helped Minnesota United. But, you know, look, I mean, Minnesota are fortunate in the fact that there's plenty of individuals that want to keep a hold of the ball. I think when you look at Ozzie Alonso, who we're expecting to be a regular piece in the 11 now after he seems to have recovered from his injuries. alongside Corey Hayes. I think the ball retention from those two has been very good. We're assuming Jan Gregoš may very well be back for the Cincinnati game as well after quarantining from his travels with the Slovakian national team, another player who I think possesses the ball quite well. Mm-hmm. So you're always wanted to possess the ball when you're in your third and in the midfield, because that's where you're trying to play the ball forward to look for different angles and look for a way forward. I'm not too concerned about teams possessing the ball in the final third at all, because that's where you are expected to be quick. That's where you are expected to break, and it's not too much of a concern in my opinion. It depends on how certain individuals want to play the system or whatever. But I think ball retention is something that is a peculiar subject that comes across a lot in world football. And as you've said already, Steve, and I agree that it's not a major objective throughout the entirety of the 90 minutes. However, you never want to give the ball away. And I think if you're organised enough, you can get away with it. In the sense of not having enough possession. If you're organised enough defensively, you can get away with it. If your shape's well-structured, then I think you're okay. But we've seen when you've got a side like Minnesota United who like to press and counter-attack, I don't think it's a massive problem. But I think Minnesota United are fine right now in terms of the ball retention. I really do.
Yeah, I think it's just more interesting to consider the question of what is efficient tactics, and maybe there's certain conventional wisdom things that come down through the history of any sport about like how to play, and that those things aren't always. I mean, some of those things are just done that way because they were done that way. They're not done that way because of being backed up by a rigorous look at like what comes out of those things, and so. The stuff about that we talked about on the last podcast with Chase, talking about this idea of defensive pressure before the ball is even turned over, that the sort of squaring up to your man so that if the ball is turned over, you can get it back right away. It's been a long one of the things that people figured out in basketball is that it's just always better to attack a defense that's disorganized. Like, it doesn't matter how good your technique is in terms of finding a shot. It's just better to attack a defense that hasn't had time to figure out where everybody goes. And that's what the counterattack is in soccer, essentially. And so, again, it's like, it can be difficult to manufacture exactly that look without necessarily giving up a lot in terms of possession. But it makes, it's just one of those things where there's been innovations recently in terms of set pieces and how coaches approach those and realize that it's one of the few times in soccer where you get to, go from zero rather than one team being up or down. It's sort of this neutral moment where both teams sort of figure out a plan, and then it's your plan against the other plan. And so you have a larger degree of control. But also, maybe is there something to the idea of those moments when there's less control, like letting those things fly rather than trying to hold on to them so tight. So, it's an interesting discussion to have, and interesting to see where the sport is going to go overall, as you said, internationally even. So.
Yeah, and I think as well, soccer's probably, and correct me if I'm wrong here, forgive my foreign naiveties, but I think soccer's probably the only sport where things can change in an instant, in the sense of, because of the size of the field, you could be in the centre of midfield, there could be a situation in the centre circle, for example, and all of a sudden Ozzie Alonso pings the ball over to an overlapping Metanier, and everything changes completely. And all of a sudden you've got a completely new problem from a defensive point of view there, So it just depends. It depends on the system. It depends on the situation. But as I said before, best game in the world.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about Cincinnati. We're hoping that maybe Jan is back for this one. Again, the lineup question is always going to be the one that we're dealing with as far as injuries, absences, all kinds of stuff, who's in, who's out. I thought that I wanted to say, you mentioned Ozzie Alonso before. Looks great coming in. I mean, there's certainly, as we were saying in the press box, certainly worse problems than having Hassani go down and having to bring in Ozzie Alonso off the bench, who just immediately provides his steadying hand to that whole sort of upper back line, sort of that guy in front of the back line who controls things and gets everybody calm. You can always see him saying, let's slow it down a little bit. Let's think this out. So it's possible we see Jacory and Ozzie. It's possible we see Ozzie and Jan. That midfield pivot again. I felt pretty comfortable with Jacory and Ozzie. Jacory has looked great. I mean, first of all, the tuck is fantastic. He tucks his shirt in, which nobody does, and it just is very tight. I love it. So, I'm going to be talking to Ja'Cory tomorrow for a loon dive on Thursday. So anybody who's paying attention now can pay attention to that. It'll be a lot of fun to talk one-on-one with him for about 15, 20 minutes. But I mean, you know, like I feel pretty comfortable with an array of center mids that is Ja'Cory Hayes, Sasani Dotson, Ozzie, and Jan. That's a pretty good selection.
Yeah, it is a pretty good selection, Steve. You're right. And when you think of Ja'Cory Hayes coming in as essentially the fourth choice central midfielder there, it's not bad at all. I still can't believe I was having this conversation the other day with somebody. I still can't believe Minnesota were able to get Ja'Cory Hayes for a third round draft pick. And that's essentially daylight robbery right there. That is superb business by the people who are doing these deals. He's, you know, not particularly expensive either. So for me, he's a perfect player for someone like Minnesota United to have. So I've been impressed with him. I think I've been impressed in the sense that I didn't expect as much from him. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I hadn't seen him as much as clearly Adrian and the staff had. So I've been very impressed with him. I think he's blossomed since he's come to Minnesota and he's had a new lease of life, really. I think he was, almost deemed sort of quite surplus to requirements at Dallas. But I mean, it was, you know, he wasn't playing first team football as much as he is here. I can't remember the number off the top of my head right now, but the game against Houston was something, I think it was his fifth start, I think, his fifth consecutive start. Mm-hmm. Minnesota United. Let me get my notes. Hang on. This is what you get when you're watching live and you're not listening to the audio version. So this is what you should do from now on is watch us live. So here's my match boards, which I'm going through things. So Ja'Cory Hayes made his fourth consecutive MLS start for the first time since May of 2019. I certainly didn't expect him to be as consistently starting, but the fact that he is proves a lot. And I think someone like him is so key to have around the roster, and he's impressed. He really has.
Yeah. So looking at the team coming into this game, I was working on writing up the preview a little bit. And so what I said is the good news is that Minnesota United is undefeated in their last four games, includes three clean sheets. The not so good news is that Minnesota United have only managed one win in those games, including giving up a 2-goal lead. The it gets better news is that their lone win in that four was against FC Cincinnati, who they're heading to face. So sort of all, you know, seems to even out in a way that could be favorable for Minnesota. Of course, I believe things were favorable before and have been proven wrong by them, but Cincinnati certainly not looking like world beaters. They've lost five of their last six, and they lost to DC United, which seemed like the team that everybody gets to have a win against so far. So there's a lot of things to like about FC Cincinnati. Overall, not so much right now, it seems like, Cal.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting just looking at some of my notes that I made earlier on here today, Steve, and very much like Minnesota, it is just one win in the last seven in Major League Soccer for FC Cincinnati, and the single victory from the last seven came at home as well. They've not been great at home in the last seven games either. So it doesn't exactly resemble a fortress Nippert Field for them at the moment, or Nippert Stadium, Rob. I think at the moment, FC Cincinnati are undergoing a bit of a transitional period, obviously under the new head coach, Jupp Stam. He wants to play a certain way. He wants to play this 4-3-3, which now, after a while of playing with five at the back, it was against Minnesota where he first tried out the 4-3-3 at Allianz Field in the last victory for the Loons. And I thought they were quite good, actually. I thought they were quite unfortunate that day. No doubt Minnesota were the better team and deserved the victory, but it was probably the best iteration I've seen of FC Cincinnati since they'd come into Major League Soccer. And I know that doesn't say a lot about them, with all due respect, but there are some real positives for them moving forwards. I think they've got some decent individuals. I know he was, not to sound harsh, but he was woeful against Minnesota, Jurgen Locadia. But there's a player there, Steve. I think I mentioned on a previous podcast, I saw him play for PSV Eindhoven several years ago, and he was wonderful. I'm still convinced he's better as a wide player than he is a centre forward. But this is this alongside maybe three or four leagues around the world is the only league that where he would come in and play as a centre forward. You know, I think he's much better as a wide player with perhaps Yuya Kubo as the centre forward. But the two of them seem to have swapped around, and Kubo is playing out wide, and Lokardi is through the middle. I don't know. For me, they're better when they're switched around. But no, I think that they've got some decent players, Steve. I like Mokocho, the South African centre midfielder that they brought in from Brentford. You know, imagine Ozzy Alonso sort of, you know, 10 years ago. You know, he's very, very good. He's a hard-nosed, never afraid to dive from a challenge type of defensive midfielder. No nonsense, keeps it simple. You know, he could be exactly what they need, you know, because they've shipped a lot of goals again this season. So, you know, so I expect it to be difficult, no doubt. It's never easy, especially in the current climate going away in Major League Soccer. But because of Cincinnati's home form again, and because of their form in general, it is a game where, once again, you do have to say, right, perhaps this is one where you would fancy Minnesota United, knowing the roster that they have going up against Cincinnati. But I don't think it's going to be as easy as a lot of people will suggest. Let's put it this way, Steve. I would take a 2-1 victory away at Cincinnati if you offered it now, and I think a lot of people would as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're definitely getting into the crunch of the season where it's like, you got to get points every game. You got a point out of a home game against a team you should have beaten. You got to go get 3 points against a team on the road that you should be beating at this point. So, but it's going to be tough. Again, the schedule, players coming in and out, consistency, who's out there on the pitch, you know, Definitely the Minnesota United just looks. I just said the Minnesota United, it sounded terrible. Sorry, I was going to say the Loons, but then I went with Minnesota United. Anyways, MNUFC out there, you know, against Houston, just a step slow, just, you know, a hair behind on the decisions, a little too much. I mean, aside from, you know, those moments when it clicked, that Jacory move to get Ethan open for that to find that's Ethan. Nice. Oh, I mean, the turn and the pass, like everything was great. I was thinking actually leading up to that goal. To throw it back to that game, but also, you know, the possibility of, you know, whenever Reynoso's, it can come back into the lineup. Without Reynoso, Minnesota United generally lacks that guy who can make the first defender miss in quite the fashion that Reynoso can do it. And I thought that in that move, Jacory was that guy. He made that first defender miss that caused a collapse that opened up something. You know, when you've got, you know, for all of Robin Lud's good qualities, again, I think defensively he's underrated as far as his job as a winger defensively, and he can obviously hit goals. He's second on the team in goals right now. You know, a little deliberate, a little slow, not usually beating people with the ball at his feet. Molino has the possibility of doing it, but he also can get dispossessed of it. Reynoso is that guy where, like, when he gets pressed, he gets out of there and he makes the defense change to adjust to him. So when they can get Reynoso back, that's going to be a huge factor in terms of having a dynamic attack, I think.
Yeah, without sort of saying it, I was alluding to that earlier on, Steve, and the fact that I think Minnesota missed someone to grab the game by the scruff of the neck, and Reynoso absolutely would have against Houston Dynamo, in my opinion. So if he is available, I don't know if he is for the Cincinnati game, that would be great. That would be wonderful. It would give Minnesota United a new lease of life. I think after what was a good point away at Nashville, but then having the two games postponed, and then the tie against Houston, I mean, I don't know this because obviously we're not around the players, but there is almost a stale feel at the moment. It feels as though something needs to change, and perhaps the re-inclusion of Reynoso will give them that spark that they obviously need. I don't know. As I said, I don't know if he's available, but if he is, if I'm Adrian Heath, well, Adrian Heath will absolutely put him back in that number 10 role. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for the 117th Sound of the Loons podcast. Minnesota United's next game is on Saturday, October 24th at 6:30 p.m. when MNUFC heads to the Queen City. I found out it's called the Queen City. To square off against FC Cincinnati. We didn't talk about Skyline Chili. Let's talk about Skyline Chili next time. I don't know if you've had it, but it looks like a disaster. So you can watch that on Fox Sports North and listen on Score North. Be sure to leave us a nice review on iTunes, or at the very least, a 5-star rating. And follow the team on Twitter at MNUFC and Cal at CalWilliams.com and me at Steve Enteris. Apologies, as always, to Richard Wagner. And remember, there's only one person in this whole world like you, and people can like you exactly as you are.